Hello, fellow rebel capitalists. Hope you're well. I'm back from the big RV tour. The RV tour without an RV. Insider joke there. We actually weren't able to hook up the RV with the truck, so we just had to drive around from spot to spot, stay in hotels, but it was an epic adventure. I can't wait to do it again. And I want to thank all the incredible people, the rebel capitalist community, for coming out and supporting the whole tour. And we're able to get out there and have a few good drinks, a little good food, and talk about macro and freedom and liberty and free market economics or free market capitalism. And it was just a wonderful experience. And I got a lot of gifts, and this is one of them. I tested positive for freedom. I had to wear that t-shirt today. So let's dive into the news. We've got from CNBC, and if you are someone that believes we are having inflation or that inflation is not transitory, then you are hysterical, according to the quote-unquote professional economists. This article, the title, "Ignore Hysterical People, Inflation is Not Here to Stay." This economist says the key points: U.S. CPI inflation came in at an annual 6.2 in October, its steepest climb for more than 30 years. The persistent high inflation and continued pressures such as supply chain bottlenecks have led many economists to question the Federal Reserve's long-held view that the spike will be transitory. I'd like to ask this economist, what is his time horizon for transitory? Because we've been having consumer price inflation, significant inflation, since 2020. So we're kind of almost at the end of 2021. So we've had it for 2 years. Is that still, can we still consider that transitory? I mean, and if not, where's the line in the sand? Like, if we have this for 3 years, is that still considered transitory? If inflation goes down after that point, how about 10 years? How about 20 years? You see, I mean, this makes absolutely no sense. And I'd like to point out to this quote-unquote economist that inflation is always transitory. We always go through, in high levels of inflation, it never goes up at a straight line. Meaning, let's go back to the 1970s. And I'm just throwing out numbers just to give you an example. Let's say in 1970, we had 8%. Well, in 71, it didn't go to 10%, in 72, 12%, in 73, 14%, just up at a perfect straight line until we get to 1980 or 81. Now, starts at maybe 8%, jumps to 12, goes down to 6, down to 4, up to 8, up to 15, down to 10. It's all over the place. It's just this average trend over the years is continuing to go up, and therefore it's persistent. So right off the bat, I can tell you this person doesn't know what they're talking about. But let's keep going. Oh, geez. All right. And my highlighting tool is not working. The breakdown of the latest U.S. data indicates inflation is confined to certain sectors, this person says, and will not pose a threat to the recovery. Oh, wow. Here, just right in the first sentence of the article, we've completely derailed. And let's go over why. So a recovery. If I say this word, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? An economic recovery where the amount or the efficiencies, the economic output of an economy increases or gets back up to the past high watermark. That would be a quote-unquote recovery. So is Carl Weinberg going to suggest that our economic output is consistent with what it was in 2019? Really? Are we on that trajectory when we have a trade deficit that's double what it was, and it was close to all-time highs back then? So we go from a $40 billion trade deficit to an $80 billion trade deficit, yet somehow we are in an economic recovery. We have $120 billion a month, Carl, in QE. We have interest rates at 0%. And that is somehow, in your mind, a quote-unquote economic recovery? I mean, who are we trying to fool here? And you'll notice throughout this article, this is the game they play. It's just these, they're interchanging words to try to confuse the reader. Or they're using words in a clever way to try to confuse the reader and maybe push their narrative. I think that's a better way of saying it. And then they're also saying in his argument is that, well, it's not really inflation because the only things that have gone up in price are, I mean, food, energy, shelter. And there's other things that have gone down in price, like cell phones. And I would argue they haven't even really gone down in price. They've just improved. So you see, in Carl's world, what can happen is they can improve this cell phone. They can make one with a better camera and increase the price by 10 bucks. But the camera is so good that they consider that a price reduction. While at the same time, gas prices double. Housing prices go up by 20%. Food prices go up by 50%. But yet Carl would say, whoa, time out. You're being hysterical. That's not inflation. All prices aren't rising at the same level. There's some prices that are going down when you use hedonics or substitution or some other measurement that's completely bogus. And here we go. The persistent high inflation and continuation of pressure, such as supply chain bottlenecks, have led many economists to question Federal Reserve's long-held view that spike will be transitory, like going back to Carl. And so what you'll notice is they'll say, oh, well, this is just a result of excess demand. It's just a result of supply chain disruptions. Okay, well, where has that excess demand come from? It's come from the government deficit spending and the Fed monetizing the debt and the amount of dollars in circulation going completely parabolic. So are we going to have more of that in the future, Carl, or are we going to have less of that? And if we have less, what's that going to do to the stock market? What's that going to do to the housing market? What's that going to do to, now I would include the cryptocurrency market, and then what's going to happen to the real economy? What's going to happen to your recovery then? You see, I think just to give them the benefit of the doubt, these economists, they get so caught up in their textbooks that they learned in college. They get so caught up in their formulas and their graphs and all of these theories that they completely lose all common sense whatsoever. And you can see it just throughout this article. Now, more specifically talking about the supply chain bottlenecks, how are we going to fix that, Carl? How is that going to just magically fix itself? Well, what we have to do is we have to ask ourselves, what's creating the supply chain bottlenecks? If it's demand, which I would argue it's not necessarily 100% demand, but is that going to decrease in the future? If it's regulation, which I would argue is a bigger component of it, if it's more micromanaging of the economy, more central planning, i.e. mandates, are we going to have more of that in the future or less of that? And if the answer is we're going to have the same amount or more, then how on earth are we going to fix the supply chain bottlenecks if we don't get rid of the source of the problem? We've gone into this weird type of hall of mirrors economy, like Jim Grant would say, where the cure for high prices are no longer high prices. It's very bizarre because the free market can't work. The free market can't create that additional supply to bring prices down to an equilibrium. And this is another sentence I wanted to highlight for you guys. However, stronger than expected October retail sales and industrial production figures this week have indicated the broader economic recovery may well be on track. So what Carl does is he looks at retail sales. Those are going up. He says, oh my gosh, look at this recovery. The economy's booming. It's on fire. But what he doesn't point out, and what Schiff points out all the time, so I've got to give him credit, is the retail sales, they're not adjusted for inflation. So if you have prices go up by, let's say, 100%, then economists like Carl would say the economy's booming, when in reality, it's just prices have doubled. The economy isn't booming, it's getting worse. The standard of living is going down for the average Joe and Jane. Okay. Oh, geez. So Carl told CNBC Squawk Box Europe on Wednesday that industrial output and GDP back to pre-pandemic levels, the U.S. economy has essentially recovered. So you're measuring GDP just by spending. That's a result of government money printing. We'll use that term broadly. So the amount of dollars created, they're just fugazis. The government sends out those semi checks. That creates more aggregate demand. We produce less stuff by incentivizing people to stay home. Therefore, we have the largest labor shortage in human history. Our trade deficit goes from $40 billion a month down to $80 billion a month. But yet somehow, they're suggesting that the U.S. economy has essentially recovered. And we're doing $120 billion. Sure, it's going down to $105 billion, but we'll see how long that lasts of quantitative easing.
This podcast is brought to you by Rebel Capitalist Pro, the best online investing research. I have teamed up with Chris McIntosh and Lynn Alden, two of the best in the business, to create Rebel Capitalist Pro and give you the tools you need to build wealth and thrive in this crazy world of economic insanity. Rebel Capitalist Pro is jam-packed with Chris and Lynn's incredible research. We have live stream Q&As where you can ask your questions directly to Chris, Lynn, and myself. And the best of all, there's an online member forum which allows you to network, learn, and explore ideas with like-minded individuals. What are you waiting for? Check out Rebel Capitalist Pro right now at georgegammon.com/pro. That's georgegammon.com/pro. Take action today and do something your future self will thank you for.
He argued the labor market is lagging, is typical for economic recessions. Carl, when's the last economic recession we had where the incomes of the average American went up by 20%? Show me that economic recession, please. You know, show me the economic recession where aggregate demand skyrockets as a result of government just basically sending checks, giving out free money. Show me that recession. Show me the recession we had when the cryptocurrency market cap went from $1 trillion to $3 trillion. Show me the recession where the checking deposits, the amount of dollars in the checking deposits of American households in aggregate total went from 1.2 trillion to 3.6 trillion. Show me that recession, my friend. The bottom line is it doesn't exist. You're not going to find one like that. So you can't compare this to the GFC, where unemployment lagged for that long. Now, I would say unemployment could lag for even longer now, but it's a result of something completely different. Back then, it lagged because, yes, we had an economic slowdown. Like we had here, or in 2020 and 2021, we had an economic slowdown, but it's being masked, it's being covered, it's being papered over by inflation, and it's being papered over about recalculating the numbers to push a narrative, and it's being papered over by money printing. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the economy has recovered. We are still in a recession. The economic output is still lower. And I would argue, because of these government policies, that the economic output will continue to decrease in the future. And here's more of the insanity. We have a problem related to specific sectors of the economy, not the economy overall. How can you argue that when we have interest rates at 0%? I mean, again, that's the question I'd ask. Well, if the economy overall doesn't have any problem, then great. Let's just stop quantitative easing. Let's just reduce the Fed's balance sheet down to $800 billion and raise interest rates to 5%. I mean, we should have no problem whatsoever because the economy overall is doing great. Here we go. We go from the ridiculous to the completely insane. He suggests that the market needs to keep productivity gains in mind when looking at wage increases, which are tolerable with steady, stable prices as long as they're offset by productivity gains. How are we having productivity gains when we have the biggest labor shortage in human history and we have a trade deficit going from $40 billion to $80 billion? Where are we getting these productivity gains? Like there's no CapEx whatsoever. These companies are just buying their shares back. And just see what I'm saying there? It's like he's getting caught up in these formulas and these equations to the point where he's not just going outside, looking out his window and scratching his head and saying, my formula tells me that we're having a lot of productivity gains, but how are we having them? What is the result of these? What is creating these productivity gains? Is it these tens of millions of people who are choosing not to go back to work? Is it these? Is it the great resignation? Is that somehow contributing to creating more goods and services, to creating additional productivity? You see, none of that makes sense. And that's why I say that if you're a trained economist like this, you completely have to ignore common sense. You have to ignore common sense in lieu of some sort of formula in a textbook. And then put all your eggs in that basket. And here he says he's arguing that, estimated that around one third, oh, here we go. This is what we were referring to earlier. And he's talking about the CPI reading. Let me highlight this whole sentence. Citing his company, High Frequency Economics, aggregation of data across the component sectors with the CPI reading, Weinberg estimated that around one third are falling while half are growing at less than 2%, which he argued is not inflation. Let's remember how Carl is measuring inflation. So for that, and here's where he goes on to call basically you and I and everyone watching this live stream hysterical. Oh, geez. Okay, so what I was going to do is go to another article which shows how they calculate CPI or how Carl calculates CPI. And you'll notice for most of it has nothing to do with consumer prices. So you're kind of scratching your head and saying, how? I thought, isn't the CPI a measurement of consumer prices? It's not. It's a measurement of the standard of living. They've changed it so many times, and they admit that it's no longer just taking a basket of goods and services and then comparing that to the same basket of goods and services a year later or 2 years later. Now they use substitution. They use hedonics is, I think, how you pronounce it, where you're looking at the quality of improvement and then you're substituting. Well, they say if the price of beef goes up, but the price of chicken is still the same as the price of beef was a year ago, then there's no inflation. It's totally bogus. It's intellectually dishonest to an unbelievable degree. So now back to this article, and this is really like just jaw-dropping. He cites Milton Friedman to make the case that Fed intervention based on these individual pockets of spiking inflation would likely do more harm than good. He also highlighted comments from Fed Chair Jerome Powell and Bank of England Governor Andrew Bailey, both of whom have suggested that tightening policy response inflation resulting from temporary supply shocks would be counterproductive. So just giving him the benefit of the doubt, he's going back to when Friedman was criticizing the Federal Reserve for contributing or maybe even creating the Great Depression of the 1930s. By not making their policy or money more readily available. And therefore, you had the banking debacle. You had all these collapses in the banking system, the run on the banks. And therefore, this created the problem. And the government came in with all their additional spending, which exacerbated the problem and extended it. This is just a very basic summary of Friedman's view. But what Weinberg, again, complete intellectual dishonesty right here, is he's omitting the fact that Friedman was a monetarist. Therefore, he believed that inflation was due to creating more money. It was a result of the money supply. Well, look at what has happened in the money supply, Carl. Look at what's happened in M2. It's gone parabolic. So you're just cherry picking. And this is giving him the benefit of the doubt, that he's just cherry picking something that Milton Friedman said that has really nothing to do with what he is saying to push his narrative. And here we go. Here's pretty much where he's showing his true colors. Let's not be influenced by hysterical people like Larry Summers, who are telling us that inflation is taking off. Let's listen to what the people who are actually making policy are telling us. So, and let's just omit Larry Summers for a moment, and let's just insert the average Joe and Jane, who has really, really, really been complaining that prices are going up. So what he's saying here is, let's not be influenced by the hysterical people in the real economy, you plebs out there that are complaining about your grocery prices and the cost of gas being at all-time highs. Let's listen to the people who are the central planners, because they're the ones that are smart. Again, see, it's this view of central planning. And you guys know what I think that goes back to, or what that view is similar to. I'll keep it YouTube friendly here. It was a concept that was very popular in the 1920s in the United States and elsewhere. And this idea was that there were a group of people that were just genetically superior to everyone else. And therefore, those people who were inferior, we should take away their freedom and liberty, because that's what's going to drive society forward. That's what's for the greater good. And it's the exact same thing that Carl is saying, or it's the exact same concept, where those people out in the real economy, well, they're just too stupid to know what inflation really is. They're just too dumb. They're just intellectually inferior. Therefore, the people who are really smart, like the people at the Fed, we should just listen to them. And all you people out there that are complaining that you can't afford to put gas in your car, you can't afford groceries, you can't afford to put a roof over your head, you just need to shut up and listen to Janet Yellen, Jerome Powell, and Lael Brainard. And that's, I could go on, but honestly, guys, that's all I can take of that nonsense. All right, Josh is saying there's a super chat. Can you do a whiteboard video about the RPO figures that show daily? I don't know anything about that, man. So I might look into it. I'm going to do a whiteboard video tomorrow, but it's going to be on the CPI measurement and inflation, disinflation, inflation being transitory, and my belief that we've been in an economic collapse or an economic depression since 2008. If you measured the CPI the way just a normal person would, that has common sense, we have been in an economic depression for at least a decade, at least, if not longer. So everything that you're seeing in your daily lives, I think, would point in that direction. But yet somehow, just because the CPI tells us that we still have real GDP growth, we completely ignore what our eyes are telling us every single day when we drive down the street and see all these homeless people that weren't there 20 years ago. So that's what I'm doing the whiteboard video on tomorrow. Okay, guys, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I am glad to be back in the studio. We're going to crank out the content and just really stand up and fight for freedom, liberty, free market, capitalism. And I would really ask you to do the same thing in your personal life. We'll see you on the next video.